And now to our weekly reporters' roundtable. Last night, Democratic presidential hopefuls again took the stage, this time in Hollywood, for what many gay Americans are calling a historic event. The forum was sponsored by a gay activist group, the Human Rights Campaign. Among the many issues on the agenda were questions about same-sex marriage and the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. And for the rest of the story and much more, we've got a few folks joining us. Erin Aubrey Kaplan is a contributing editor at the L.A. Times op-ed section and joins us here in the studio. Hello.
Hello. Good to be here.
Good. And Sean Gonsalves is assistant news editor for the Cape Cod Times. He's also a syndicated columnist. Hello, Sean.
Hello. On the other side of the country, I'm here.
Okay. And Corey Dade, a Southern correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Cheryl.
Well, we are going to kick things off with a montage from last night's forum, so take a listen.
I'll tell you, I'll make you a promise. 5 years from now, the marriage issue will be a non-issue in the next presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. Just that simple.
And if the state should not be intervening against people, the state should be there on behalf of people.
In my judgment, what is achievable is civil unions with full marriage rights, with domestic partnership. I believe that's achievable.
The kids who go to public schools need to understand why same-sex couples are the parents of some of the children. They need to understand that these are American families.
I am a strong supporter, not of a weak version of civil unions, but of a strong version in which the rights that are conferred at the federal level to persons of who are part of a same-sex union are compatible. Now,
we have moved a long way on this and other issues, but I think it's important to recall how much of an advance Don't Ask, Don't Tell was at the time.
All right. So that was former Senator Mike Gravel, Congressman Dennis Kucinich, Governor Bill Richardson, and Senators John Edwards, Barack Obama, and Hillary Clinton. Again, last night in Hollywood, 6 of the 8 Democrats running for president showing up last night. Joe Biden and Chris Dodd, of course, not part of the event. Folks, this was more of a forum than a debate with each candidate appearing separately. Erin, why don't I begin with you? Did you think that worked?
No, I think it was quite Hollywood, appropriately enough in Hollywood. It was very symbolic. I mean, it was an invited group of like 200 people. Melissa Etheridge and some other people mm-hmm. were the
questioners.
Yeah.
Yes.
And but really, I don't think no one moved from the position. No one moved except, I think, for Dennis Kucinich, who is, and one other candidate actually supports gay marriage. That is really the crux of this. I mean, we are tolerant of gays. We support the right to do this and that. But the real central issue here is gay marriage. In other words, that is the real equality issue here.
Mm-hmm.
And the candidates did not go that far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that will mean to the gay constituency. I think there's been sort of a backlash against the anti-gay sentiment that's really been rampant the last 6 or 7 years. So, like I said, rich in symbolic value, but in terms of moving the discussion ahead, no, I don't think there was much there.
Corey, do you agree? Not much movement, not much that these candidates did talking about gay marriage, HIV virus, anything at all?
Cheryl, I don't think so. I think the Democrats, regardless of their efforts to moderate their views, to draw more swing voters and more moderate voters, the party itself is still the party of the big tent, and so they cannot run, so to speak, from the responsibility that they have to address the issues of gay rights, same-sex marriage, etc. And to this point, no candidate has been so aggressively, with the exception of Kucinich, obviously, has been so aggressively willing to come back to address the issues involving these particular communities. And it's going to be a matter of time before they have to. It's a necessity.
Well, the debate was put together by the Human Rights Campaign, and it's really been rare to see presidential candidates woo this audience in the past. So this campaign is quite different in that respect. So, Sean, what do the Democrats really stand to gain?
What do they stand to gain? Well, I don't know that they have much to gain. I think our previous guests had it right. No matter who the Democratic candidate is, I think in terms of trying to influence swing voters by trying to moderate their views, I don't think could really help in any way. What stood out to me the most was, there were no surprises, of course. I mean, nobody said anything new, but it was a little interesting when, you know, Governor Bill Richardson, you know, when he was asked, do you think homosexuality is a choice? He said, yeah, it's a choice, which I think, you know, cuts also to the crux of the matter that, you know, that pits, you know, this conservative Christians who definitely think it's a choice.
But then he kind of backtracked a little bit, didn't he?
Well, he did. And I think, you know, he realized it was a little uncomfortable, I think, for him and and probably also for Edwards.
Yeah. Well, you all talk about swing voters. And I was wondering, Aaron, if you thought by having this appearance, if Democrats were actually putting themselves at risk with swing voters.
Oh, gosh. I wish we'd stop talking about this. Yes.
Well, we will in a few minutes.
I don't mean you. I'm sorry. Yeah, of course there's a risk. But in a way, it reminded me very much of how they approach African-American voters. They come into a church or into a special setting and say, we support you, but we won't go so far as to support prison reform or something like that. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a big tent, but it's not that big. The gay vote, I guess it's small enough to be a swing vote, but it's also potentially powerful because a lot of high profile people are gay. So, but essentially, like, you know, I sound like a broken record, but I don't think it's going to move the Democratic Party to a different policy. And keep in mind, there are a lot of socially conservative people in the Democratic Party, including Black voters, who have sort of taken the Bush bait and support and sort of gotten on the anti-gay, you know, wagon. And I think the Democrats are very cognizant of that.
So how important, I guess, appearing before this group doing this forum, of course, trying to get an endorsement perhaps of sorts. Do any of you think that an endorsement from the GLPT advocacy groups would be helpful to any of these candidates?
Well, certainly financially. You know, I think it's pretty well known. I don't have any numbers, but a lot of, you know, gay Americans do pretty well financially. And then you got folks like Tim Gill and others who have contributed quite a bit of money on that side. So, and it seems like there seems to be, at least around Tim Gill, who's that computer mogul out in, Denver, Colorado, there seems to be more of an effort focused sort of outside of the big political picture on state initiatives and so forth. So, but I think it could help them on the financial front.
All right. Well, if you are just joining us, we're doing a roundup sort of the week's news, and joining us are Aaron Aubrey Kaplan, Sean Gonzalez, and Corey Dade. Let's take a look now at another story. Barbara Morgan has waited 21 years, but she finally made it to outer space yesterday. Originally, she was the backup for Krista McAuliffe in that, of course, tragic 1986 Challenger mission. Morgan is a former elementary school teacher from Idaho. She is now an astronaut up in space. She'll be in space for 2 weeks on the Endeavour spacecraft. What do you recall, first of all, of the Challenger explosion? And do you think that the Teacher in Space program is a good idea? Aaron, why don't I start with you?
Well, I'm too young to remember 1980s. Oh, yes.
Right.
Yeah, I was a child. No. Yeah, of course, I do remember the that. And I remember took me, as I'm sure took the rest of the country, by surprise. You know, you forget how dangerous these missions are. It's not like driving a car or taking a ship. I mean, and so what I remember, of course, are Ronald Reagan's words, which are something like, they touched the face of God, which I thought was an interesting way of saying the thing blew up and the whole, you know, and things went wrong. Mm-hmm. And it, of course, is very tragic. It's interesting. I don't know that I would persist 21 years in stand to get in line for an obviously dangerous mission like this. I guess, you know, there's some individual honor or, you know, to that. But I have to say, the space program itself is another issue. And I think, talk about symbolism, I think that's mainly what it is.
Uh-huh. Sean, what do you think the national value is of having a teacher in space?
Well, I mean, I think it's basically like a giant pep talk for kids or something like that. I mean, it's inspirational. I mean, I was a sophomore in high school when and they broke into the study hall and announced it. And at that time, it was big and shocking. And but, you know, and as a youngster, you know, it sparks the imagination. You see all these science fiction movies, Star Wars, and all these things. So I think, but it has only really that kind of value, because the irony in this whole thing, of course, is that as a teacher, I mean, if you listen to the space science community, they're very upset with the way the whole space program is going in terms of all this focus on men. I mean, much better information for a lot less dollars is coming back from unmanned space missions. And so it's kind of interesting that a teacher who can be this inspirational person for young people at the same time sort of is involved in a program that the space community is saying isn't really that valuable.
Mm-hmm. Well, NASA, of course, is hoping that this flight will draw attention away from some recent embarrassing news, including a medical report that some astronauts had previously been intoxicated on launch day. And, Corey, I was wondering if you thought that would actually this flight will actually do that if it's a successful trip.
In a word, no. I think that NASA as an institution, apart from the imperative, I believe, and many Americans believe, we have to explore our world and our universe and the immeasurable benefits that brings to not only educating youth, but also to improving our lives here through technology and just the advancement that comes with it. NASA as an institution has been troubled for years from everything from panels falling off the space shuttles to now this. And I think at this point, we have not seen in the news very often issues involving astronauts in their personal lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's pretty much an outgrowth of any type of institution we have where the veil of a respected group, whether you're talking about pilots or whether you're talking about politicians many years ago, the veil of those institutions and the people in them, you know, is pierced. And so I don't think it goes beyond that. I think it's something that is endemic in any institution where you have, people who perform very complicated functions and involve a high amount of risk. It's a matter of, clamping down and enforcing the practices you have.
Yeah. Well, I want to turn real quickly. We only have time for a quick comment on one other subject. This morning, Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff and Commerce Secretary Carlos Gutierrez held a press conference saying the Bush administration is going to move forward with immigration reform without Congress's help. And so the question remains, what's on the president's to-do list as far as this is concerned? Aaron, you want to start us off here?
Well, I guess Bush is trying to let us know that he's going his own way, as he tends to do on a lot of things with immigration. He certainly thumbed his nose at Congress before. But I think what he's emphasizing, from what I understand in this press conference, is we will target employers who employ undocumented workers, which, of course, has been tossed around, a lot.
I was going to ask everybody, does that seem like an unpopular starting point for a Republican administration to?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's another aspect to it, too, that's kind of interesting. Is that
real quickly,
In most people's minds, people think that illegal immigrants don't often pay into Social Security, and I think a lot of them do. There's this sort of unintended consequence of what if you end up kicking all these people and you don't have this money going into Social Security? I mean, just on the practical side of things.
Well, do you guys expect Congress to do anything before its next session or during its next session?
Well, I think now the administration has forced Congress's hand to come back to this issue fairly quickly. I think we're coming into the election season, and so it'll be incumbent upon them to do so. Otherwise, the administration, and by extension perhaps the Republicans, can claim that they were aggressive in, at the very least, enforcing the immigration enforcement laws that already exist.
Let me stop you there and say thank you to you all.
Thank you.
Sure.
All right, thank you.
Aaron Aubrey Kaplan is a editor at the LA Times op-ed section. Sean Gonzalez is assistant news editor for the Cape Cod Times. And Corey Dade is a Southern correspondent for the Wall Street Journal.